All right, we should have you with me now.
Great.
Can you say something for me? Yes, I can hear you.
Test, test, 1, 2, 1, 2.
Yes, excellent.
Awesome. It's a suspense at the beginning of every call these days. It's, will the tech work?
Well, the great thing with this, of course, you can edit it all down so no one has to ever know.
Exactly, exactly. Please do. Make me sound smart.
Oh, man. Jeez. I'm like, you know, I want to get to the point where this is just easy and you can just like plug it in and play.
Yeah.
Hey, you've got a very similar setup. I like it.
I do, yeah. It's a great microphone.
Definitely, definitely. It's, yeah, I'm still sort of trying to get my podcast setup working smoothly, but yeah, we'll get there. I think it's just trying to juggle million and one things,
yeah,
and all the rest of it. How long have you been doing your podcast?
About a year.
How's it been going?
It, yeah, I mean, same, right? Like it's a continuous learning journey, and I mean, I've had a great time doing it, and I think what was important for me, because I was doing it at the side of my job, I'm like, you know, managing my own expectations, like how much time am I going to dedicate and what's realistic to achieve in that time frame. And I think with that, I've been rolling quite okay. And yeah, I mean, more importantly, it's been triggering my sort of recent side project or startup idea. So it's been really helpful for that as well. And yeah, it's
let's just dive straight into it, because you mentioned you're doing a startup, so that sounds quite interesting. And I had a sort of quick look, because I know you've been, you work for various, you've worked for Google, you've done some AI stuff, you're now working for a big agency, is that right?
Yeah, so my sort of proper role description is I'm a product designer in the advanced analytics space, so dealing a lot with data and yeah, consulting on that side.
Fantastic. So well, let's rewind then and just sort of bring it back to, how did you get into this sort of area of expertise?
Yeah, sure. So my initial background was in something called innovation design, which is basically how can we use technology to solve humanity's big problems. And out of that, I was working for a medical technology startup for about a little under 2 years. And really focusing on the sort of human component of it. And that's kind of what I ended up sort of specializing in and being really fascinated about. And this might be a little sidetrack, you can cut it out, but
no, it's I think
what was really interesting about it was that it was a sort of digital physiotherapy solution. And it's actually the company's is around, and they've been doing really well. They moved to San Francisco. It's called Hinge Health. So it's digital physiotherapy delivered for you know, anyone with chronic knee or back or joint conditions. And what was really fascinating to me in the beginning was that here is something that is, you know, fundamentally very technological at heart, but the question is like, how do we make it relevant for people who may not be, you know, that technologically savvy, and, you know, fundamentally keep the eyes on the ball, which is helping them with a medical condition and not get too sidetracked into the technology. And so I really try to make that link between help, like basically driving behavior change, right? Like using technology to facilitate and encourage and empower like those people to do what's best for their body and to create a condition in terms of physiotherapy. And sometimes with a population that, you know, has never even had a smartphone or a tablet before at the time. And what I thought was really, really interesting back then already was the sort of connection between data and that sort of behavior change. Like one huge component we found is that in order to build trust in any solution and any recommendation, seeing somehow sort of objectively expressed that following what you're supposed to be doing is driving an improvement is really, really powerful. And I think that's something in a nutshell that I still try to do today is to think about, okay, here are all these like abstract streams of data, but what does it actually mean for a person in the sense that they can use it to make the decisions that are best for, you know, whatever it is they're doing, be it, you know, running a podcast or improving their health condition. And so that's sort of like a big learning I took away from that. And then I left the startup as they moved to the States, and I'm based in London. They wanted to stay here, and sort of worked for a range of technology agencies, user experience agencies. Like you said, I spent some time at Google, and that sort of added another piece to the puzzle, which is sort of driven by my curiosity at the time, because a couple of years ago, and you know, to an extent still, there's all this mystique floating around, you know, what AI can do, right? Like every startup was saying like, okay, we're going to change the world. We're powered by AI, and you know, this is how it's going to work. And, you know, like, partly selfishly, or like as a learning experience, I just wanted to be able to, you know, to develop my judgment and to say like, okay, this one, you know, is kind of not really achievable or doable or believable, while there's some other solutions that might be. And working at Google, where, you know, as you can imagine, pretty much anything that's developed has some kind of AI component attached to it, or is integral to it, that really helped me get kind of like a broad spectrum view of like, what can you actually do?
And that's interesting. So Google was a bit of a almost like an education,
yeah,
you know, place that you could sort of go into, sort of discover, you know, from a very sort of high level, what's doable and what's not doable.
Yeah, exactly. Very, very much so. And I really wanted to sort of double down on that. And that's when I joined this advanced analytics consultancy, which is part of McKinsey, called Quantum Black. And been there for about 2.5 years. And along the entire journey, always sort of thinking about product development as well. I think like as a product designer, I was always more interested in, you know, to what end are we actually doing this? I think, you know, mastering your craft is a really, really important first step. But then I think naturally, as you have more and more experience, you kind of ask yourself, like, why are we even working on this? Like, is this a worthwhile problem to be solving? And
do you find within your sort of, with some people that you'll see that they don't do that first initial step of actually quantifying and qualifying whether the end user is going to benefit from it, and they get too carried away with the tech?
100%. I think it's two things. Like it's the tech, and that's certainly true, I think, in a lot of startup environments that I've observed, where founders sort of came across a technology or maybe developed a technology, you know, out of university, some kind of like AP conversion into a business, and they're like, okay, we're gonna use this tech, and then they go looking for a problem, and
it's the wrong way around, effectively.
Exactly. Yeah, it's kind of the other way around. And like, I'm sure that can work, like if, you know, in very sort of technological expertise driven industries. But I think
you can spend a huge amount of time developing the tech that nobody actually wants.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's the huge risk. And I think the other component to that as well is the business lens to that. And I think that is probably more prevalent in corporate environments, where you make that assumption that, okay, we have a business problem to solve, like want X revenue, savings, whatever it might be. Here's a technology that can do that. Okay, let's go do it. And then sometimes solutions get developed and deployed, and, you know, in theory and on the balance sheet, it all works out, but then it falls down because end users haven't been considered, and they're not adopting the solution. They're not choosing to use it. And then the entire investment goes down the drain. And then, you know, there's a big surprise and chaos about like, well, why didn't it work?
You know what is stunning to me? It is just unbelievable, because there is so many people I speak to who, you know, we hear about the same problem. And ultimately, I call it part of the pre-launch strategy of effectively analyzing your audience and really understanding, you know, not just, you know, what their pains and problems are and validating with them, and therefore linking your brand with what you're trying to achieve and making it all cohesive. But the it does sort of, I mean, I guess it doesn't amaze me, because I know we're all sort of very ambitious and we want to run at 100 miles an hour, but I think it's so important to get that first phase right and really think about, you know, that end user and getting validation, because you know, it happens so much, doesn't it? And this is when, of course, people got to pivot.
Yeah. And I think, like, another problem to this is that by now people think like, oh, we're familiar with Agile, right? We're doing Agile, and so we're all good. But then they're missing the first piece of the puzzle. So like, okay, maybe you are developing individual features in a sort of user-centered way, and maybe you're showing prototypes to use and getting feedback. But what about the discovery up front? And what I see, like, very often is that you have some kind of senior stakeholder come up with an idea, putting a team together to solve that problem, and then they might be working in an Agile fashion, but they've missed the discovery, and they might be working in an Agile fashion on the wrong problem. And that's
what do you mean by discovery? Sorry.
So when typically when I start
about the user discovering something.
I'm talking about the sort of opportunity discovery or sort of problem space. So when I start working on a new project, like let's say I always use an example of like a flight booking app, right? Then rather than say like, okay, let's improve the booking process and let's have an agile team to, you know, improve the booking process. Let's spend some time on actually looking at the entire end-to-end customer journey from, you know, how they, you know, plan their holidays and how they, you know, find different kind of providers and, you know, the conversations they have with their friends and family about this, and really map out that journey to identify, find the booking journey might be something that we can improve, but what else might be areas that we haven't actually thought of yet that yield much greater opportunities for improvement? It might be something completely different. And I think that's the issue with that myopic view of like, okay, if we have an app, like surely we only work on the things that a flight booking app should be doing. But actually, like, why don't you see yourself as someone who's providing like a smoother travel experience to your customer, and like all of a sudden your problem space opens up massively.
Yeah, no, definitely. You actually help them get to the airport and not just when they're at the airport type thing.
Exactly.
Interesting. And so moving forward now in terms of your situation, you said you're working on your own startup?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still kind of hesitant to call it a startup because, you know, I think similar to some of the conversations that you've had previously in the show, it's very much sort of pre-launch. But basically what happened is that I really enjoy having conversations just this, like talking about, you know, how to make product development in a broader sense more effective. And so earlier in the year, or about a year ago, I started a podcast talking about this. It's called Product Nuggets. And basically what I was trying to do is like, it's, you know, each is just like about 8 to 15 minutes of me talking about a specific question, because what I found happening is that with any given week, like three different people might come to me with the same question. And then at some point I was like, okay, I'm just going to record the answer to this question and like put it online and then
just watch my podcast. And
exactly, yeah, kind of, which has been great and super, super fun.
It's like a super FAQs, isn't it?
Yeah. Kind of, yeah, like an FAQ for product development. I wanted to make it inclusive. There are a couple of problems I wanted to solve with it, breaking down silos between product management, design, development, and all those kinds of things, just thinking about how can we do better as product development teams. But as I started doing that, and while I was working in sort of an advanced analytics environment, as a podcaster, I found that there is a whole range of problems still in this industry. I mean, it's been around for a very long time, but I think it's fair to say that it's still not very mature yet. It's certainly very fragmented when it comes to the solutions out there to the various different problems. And I just, like, as a new starter, I just thought it's really easy to do. It's one of those things that's like, once you know how to do it, it's incredibly easy. But I thought to get started, and like there are so many decisions and so many options, and it was just incredibly confusing. And then still with some of the sort of individual solutions out there, I figured like, okay, that's not providing the quality of experience that I'm looking for. So you know, and again, like working in an advanced analytics environment, I thought, you know, data was one of those things that stuck out to me. And specifically, I think when you're looking at sort of podcast performance data or even like monetization and all of those kinds of things, there's this common issue of like, oh, we'll give you the information that's easy to get. And, you know, again, coming at it from a design perspective in terms of what I was saying earlier, it's like, that's not really, like, that's exactly the equivalent of the technology first problem, right? Like, okay, we embed some web link in here and we give you some download statistics because those are easy to get. But it doesn't seem like there are too many people thinking about like, okay, how is that actually going to be used? Like, how does this information help you make better decisions and fulfill your, you know, meet your strategic goals, like be it monetization or building a brand or whatever it is. And so last summer then I teamed up with an engineering colleague of mine who's also very passionate about podcasting. And we just started like running a product development team on the side. And immediately I found that that's quite different to working in sort of large corporate environments. And it reminded me very much of the earlier startup days. But that's what we've been doing since.
Fantastic, fantastic. So so you're very early days in terms of, mapping out the journey like you talked about and identifying where the pain points are potentially for user groups. How far are you along that journey?
Yeah, it's a funny one to me because I'm, as you might be able to tell, I'm incredibly biased towards doing exactly what you just described, but actually like running a sort of, like a startup of two, right? Like there are so many other things.
I know exactly, doing. Definitely. And I know exactly what you're going to say. It's like, it's very, you know, I could tell you what you should do, but when I actually do, I might just, you know.
Exactly. And there are a couple of things. I think one is that, you know, because I'm so aware that many ideas fall down at that sort of user centricity piece, I probably over index on that. And there came the point where I was talking to my fiance about this, who's a great supporter, and, you know, saying like, oh, you know, what kind of people should I interview next? And so on. And she's like, you know what? I think you've interviewed enough people. Like you know what you're doing. You should just, you know, get your head down and like work on it. Have something new to show them. And I was like, yeah, you are completely right, because there is no one else but me to do this work. And if I keep interviewing people, you know, I might have a great business plan, but I'm not going to have much else.
And just slow yourself down. Sometimes you just got to focus on, you know, the things that are going to move the dial in the biggest direction, I guess.
Yeah, 100%. And so that's why, initially we did the standard thing of like, you know, bouncing ideas with my kind of co-founder and, creating lean business canvases and writing a few hypotheses that we wanted to test and speaking to potential users and experts in the industry and all that kind of stuff. And we think we've got a pretty good starting point now. And now it's sort of build time. We're trying to come up with the first version that actually sort of works by the end of the year. And actually just last night I pressed go on the very first version of our website. So you can check it out if you're not too cruel. It's poddinglabs.com. And so we'll try to get that version out by the end of the year. We're going to start taking beta signups. And then comes the horrifying piece of finding the first couple of users.
The scary bit, isn't it? It's almost like when you're in product sort of development, product design, it's almost like you're in your own safe space where you can just, you know, you let your creative juices flow and get excited and build it out and all the rest of it. Yeah. It's when you actually go, right, let's just show somebody, you know? Let's try and launch it and let's try and get people signed up, and, you know, it gets real then, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I take a lot of comfort from this phrase. I forgot where it was, this very famous, this notion of, if you're not embarrassed by what you're showing people, then you've probably shown it too late. And like, that's how I try to approach it, but I think it's very hard to do in practice to say like, yeah, I'm just going to go out there and deliberately embarrass myself. And, yeah, you know, we'll learn from it.
Yeah, well, I guess yeah, the more times we fall flat on our face, then hopefully we keep moving forward and, you know, you sort of improve and learn and iterate. And
all exactly. And I think, you know, through all the, you know, starting troubles, of which there doubtlessly be many, we do hope and think that, you know, people will see through that and see kind of the value that we're trying to produce for them. And yeah, just trying to Fantastic. Make it as free for them as easy as possible.
No, brilliant. So in terms of, I'd be interested to sort of learn actually and sort of discover from you know, from an expert, have you, are you sort of building in sort of like marketing within the product itself? So like, you know, marketing loops or ways that there can be almost like a, an organic way for it to, for the product to be discovered, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So I guess the way I think about organic marketing at this point in time is very sort of personal and word of mouth style, because I mean even this is another benefit of user interviews that I think is often overlooked, is that the users that you interview are often the first ones who put their hand up to say like, yeah, I'll give this thing a try, and you know, if they like it, you can have those interviews with them to get their feedback and then say like, you know, do you know anyone else who might be interested in this, and kind of take it from there. So I think that's like what comes most natural to me, because it's most like, it's just conversational. You're genuinely trying to provide value. It's not this sort of like, you're not really running the risk of coming across as like salesy and, yeah. So I think that's one of the avenues that I've found in the past works pretty well.
Definitely.
In terms of building it into the product, I think, you know, I would only try and build things that have to scale. And you know, everything that doesn't have to scale, I'll just do manually. You know, I can write those emails, I can have phone calls and all those kinds of things. And, you know,
and I guess what sort of an example I was thinking of was like Dropbox, when, you know, they had quite a, within their sort of their products, they really encourage that whole sharing, you know, to get more, you know, data, you know, to get more data. So it sort of created a viral requirement to go, oh, let, you know, share it to my friend, share it to my friend. Or I guess another one would be maybe Zoom, where you might not have heard of Zoom, and then somebody sends you the link to Zoom, and it's like that starts getting into people's consciousness. I was just wondering, I think about, you know, that side of how can I get that product to self promote itself.
Gotcha. Yeah, definitely. There are a range of ideas that we have in that space. Anything from sort of assets that you can export or share, on, you know, things that you use with advertisers, things that you use to share content with your audience. And, you know, like there are a lot of sort of like web players that you see that then kind of like have the icon of the company on there. But again, I think it's probably too early for us at this point in time. I think we're just focused on like creating something that is worth sharing first. And then take it from there. I think like you said earlier, right, there's never a shortage of ideas. There's like the limiting factor is really just what can you produce and what can you build. And so we're trying to be really disciplined in terms of what are we validating at each point in time, and then building for it.
No, definitely. The ultimate game, you know, or aim, I guess, for a lot of product based businesses is having such a great product that people will naturally talk about it and shout about it and go, this is incredible, and tell their best mates. You know, that's ultimately the aim, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, I mean, for sure, that would be ideal. We'll probably still end up doing some of the things that you mentioned, but that's what I think also is so great about podcasting, is that it's such a like vibrant community around it. And so far I've been so amazed, because I sometimes like reached out to people just for sort of like advice and like literally cold emailing them, and they'll take so much time to talk to me. And I think another brilliant example that might be fun to share is you know Matchmaker, right? Like I should say, this is the platform where you found me, is where podcasters can kind of invite each other to to appear on podcasts. And one of the things I did was message people on Matchmaker asking, like, you know, this is not a sales pitch. I'm just generally looking for feedback. Like, would you have a call with me? And then somebody reported me as like a spammer, which is like, you know, fair enough. I can see how that maybe might come across that way.
I thought that was the whole point of Matchmaker, to actually connect with people and say, do you want to come on and have a chat?
Yeah. So this is really funny then, because I then got an email from Matchmaker saying basically like, look, your current, like, we can see what you're doing and we're empathizing, but your current strategy is probably not ideal. But we see that it's a pain point that needs addressing, because, you know, podcasters are an innovative bunch and they want to solve problems for the listeners and others. And then their chief marketing officer, Mike Consolo, set up like a series of calls with me, basically just like providing feedback and sharing his own ideas in this space. And it's like, oh yeah, we're thinking about building something in this area once, but it didn't quite fit our brand. So here are our ideas, run with them. And just like being so open and helpful. And that's just one example of about three or four I could think of just at the top of my head, of just people being really excited about advancing this industry.
Yeah. And I think that's the great thing. I mean, you know, over and above, you know, whatever reason we have for having a podcast, you know, I mean, you know, I have it for a bit of my own pre-launch strategy for my own tech startup. To a certain extent, you're doing exactly the same, actually. This is part of your, you know, getting the brand, getting people known and connecting and getting maybe people to test and try things out. But aside from all that, actually, I think it's a great, great way just to meet people who have similar interests and who are like-minded and, you know, go-getters. And, you know, so, you know, where now, you know, how else would we have met, you know? Yeah. So it's phenomenal. And I think what a great opportunity we all have of just, you know, meeting more people, you know, and connecting with more people in areas that we're interested in. And who knows, you know, maybe new friendships are developed and all the rest of it. It's the power of the internet is just phenomenal. It just blows my mind. And I just, you know, I think, you know, it's we're only just scratching the surface as well. That's the thing, we're only just scratching the surface, and there's so much more to come.
Yeah, and there's so many people where you just like, you talk to them and you can just feel the love for it. You know, I've talked to one person who's been working in radio for a long time and you know, is running a few podcasts, I think. And you know, his attitude is like, he was not interested in my idea whatsoever. He's just like, you know, I don't really need that data or that insight, because I just love it for the heck of it. Like, if I have 40 listeners, that's cool. If I have 4,000, that's nice. But you know, it's not why I'm doing it. And he just really loved you know, being on a radio and putting that information out and the content out and meeting guests and talking to them. And then he, you know, his attitude was like, oh, you know, if somebody else wants to listen to it, great. If not, I'm doing it for myself. It's just really fun to meet those characters.
Yeah, definitely. So so getting back to your startup, do you have a timeline that you're aiming for?
Yeah, so we like I said, we're starting to invite people to test the beta pretty much immediately. And then we'll have that rolling from beginning of the year. The idea being that hopefully a few people will start a new podcast as a New Year's resolution. So fingers crossed for that. And then it's more sort of like, not really a timeline, but like a phase plan, like a milestones, basically. Like whenever we reach the next milestone, we'll sort of level up, so to speak. But it's, I think initially we'll just run a sort of like concierge service where we try a lot of things fairly manually. So for example, one element, you know, one main element is that notion of looking into data to provide insights that actually matter, that help you make decisions in terms of your strategy. And we'll just do that manually for the time being. We both have worked in data and analytics for a very long time. You know, we'll run a few scripts that we kind of hack together and get those insights that, you know, of course, make sure that they're accurate, but it doesn't have to be fully automated yet. And then the ones that work the best way, we'll we'll build into the product. And so we keep moving. And then I think I'm just really wary that we're both, I think it's fair to say, quite good at product development. But neither one of us has too much experience with like marketing, and, you know, outreach and the sort of like, corporate, element of things. So, we already talking to a few people to, help us out as advisors on that front. But also wary that I'll just have to keep pushing myself, to do that myself. So there, for example, we're talking to a few podcast conferences next year, where we want to present, and yeah, just sort of try and get people to see what we have to offer, and hopefully they'll like what they'll see.
Fantastic. So it's interesting your approach, actually, because actually when we break it down, it's so the launch is effectively all the sort of soft launch, I guess. I mean, some people wouldn't even call it a launch, but effectively you're going live in January, I guess.
Yeah.
But what's interesting about it is you're not, I'm guessing, correct me if I'm wrong, you're not spending too much time and energy completely building out the products that you think are applicable, but you've got a broad idea of what you think is likely. And then you're going to manually assess it as more and more people come on board, more and more data comes through, and you get that feedback. So I guess that saves you a lot of potential time and energy and effort going in down the wrong path. And you're actually directly speaking to your user group and audience to evaluate which is the right path, because there might be 10 paths to go down. It's like, well, which one do we pick? You know, we can't do all 10 to begin with, but we want to focus on like one or two.
Yeah.
So I think that's exactly, yeah, I think it's a really interesting approach and a smart approach, because again, we talked about it before, too many people just start off and build something out and then realize there's, you know, no appetite for it. So that's really, really interesting. So it's an interesting one where you go, well, is this a launch or is it more of a process to get to the launch, if that makes sense? But I think with development and online businesses, it's a constant evolution, isn't it? You're not ever again, you know, there we go. You know, it's like if you become a dentist, you go and do your dentist qualification and then you said you go and join a dentistry practice, of course. And in a way that's it, but that's not to say you don't keep learning. Of course you keep learning and keep getting better and all the rest of it and have to go through constant evaluation. But I think that's the point, isn't it? Is your launch is your launch, but it is constantly evolving and constantly iterating. And I think it's a really interesting approach and something for, I think, a lot of other people who are thinking about doing something in the tech space to consider getting that audience and constantly refining it before doing too much work.
Yeah. I think, you know, you described it really well. The fundamental idea of this is to say, let's not have a launch, because there are all the risks associated with it that you already outlined. And I think it's extremely scary, it's extremely stressful, and it's also kind of like entirely arbitrary. Like when you talk to people about, like, you know, how do you decide you launch? Is it, you know, often it's a certain deadline, or is it a certain sort of feature scope? And at the end of the day, like, I don't think it matters that much. What matters more is to have that constant iteration and you know, user input. And I think another reason why many people decide to go for a sort of standard launch is that they're worried about revealing too much too soon. So like, oh, you know, we gotta work up that head start, and by the time we launch, we're so far ahead that nobody else can do what we're doing. And I'm not like, I might be eating my own words in a few months' time, like, who knows? But my hypothesis is that that doesn't actually matter that much. And the reason I believe that is that, you know, this old adage of everything's been done already. And I don't actually think it matters how often something's already been done. All it matters is, like, how are you doing it and what qualifies you as an individual, as a team, you know, based on your experience or your passion, whatever it might be, what qualifies you to solve this problem in a way that is interesting and that's appealing. And, you know, all the examples of like Google wasn't the first search engine, Facebook wasn't the first social media website. Like there's all these kinds of things that I'm, you know, not audacious enough to say we're going to be the Google of podcasting, but the point is that I don't think it matters if somebody has been there before, and I don't think it matters if somebody else is working on the same idea at the same time as you are. If anything, it kind of stimulates both sides to be more inventive and ambitious. So
I agree completely.
So yeah, so I think that sort of head start is not really a real advantage, and like definitely not if you offset it with the cost of basically being invisible to everyone you're trying to reach.
And I think also, you know, if others are doing it as well, I think it validates what you're already doing. You know, it's very rare to have a unique idea that's, you know, that no one else has thought of. It virtually doesn't exist. And if it doesn't exist, there might be a reason for that.
Exactly. I was just going to say that actually, like if, I actually made a podcast episode on exactly this before, I think if something really hasn't been done before in any way, you should probably stay away from it, because like, I think something already existing is a great validator of saying like, okay, there's something in this problem space. All you need to do is find a different angle to it.
Mm. Definitely. Do you foresee having an official launch, or do you think it will just be an organic iteration?
I like to think that it'll be organic. I think there might be a point where, I guess, what you might call an official launch, but I think of it more as like a campaign. I think the quote unquote official launch would just be another experiment in a series of many other experiments. And it'll come when we say like, okay, maybe, you know, we have something here that, you know, in addition to everything we've already done, like this is something completely new and different that our beta users are like super, super excited about. And it might be worth like shining some more attention than usual on this particular piece. Then we might do all the things that typically go into a traditional launch, but I wouldn't really see it as such. I would just see it as yet another experiment in terms of like, you know, growth.
New product, new service, a new tool.
Exactly.
Interesting. It's quite different, isn't it, to the traditional sort of way of often sort of businesses have operated before. You know, I just sort of think back to, you know, a few, I don't know, events I've been invited to in the past where, you know, new business is opening up for the first time and it's like this big song and dance. And that's great, you know, because obviously, you know, anybody who's starting a business is super excited, and I don't, you know, want to sort of dismiss that at all, but it's just very interesting how, you know, what you're describing is more of a almost a very under the radar launch, getting a few users on board, getting the data, improving it, iterating it, getting the exposure slowly growing and developing the products, and each a new product line comes out and a new service is released, and it just sort of grows and grows and grows, and maybe before you know it, it's everyone knows about it and they don't know how they knew about it. There was no big fanfare.
Yeah. I mean, two things on that. I think first, like what you described earlier, I think there's always a place to celebrate as well. I think often, you know, the launch has also a kind of like inward facing functions, to say like, okay, we've just released something that we're really, really proud of and excited about. And, you know, we just want to share it and celebrate it because it's been awesome. You know, we've been working on this for months and it's been great. And like, let's basically have some kind of version of the party around that. And I think that's completely fair. But other than that, I think I don't want to go into too much detail because it's quite boring, but I think there are a lot of sort of practical reasons why a typical launch didn't appeal to us specifically. One of them is the question of like infrastructure, where you say like, okay, before you have a launch, how many users do you expect to have, right? Are we expecting 100? Are we expecting 100,000? And, you know,
what can we manage with? What can we cope with?
Exactly. And then it's like, oh, do we like, are we going to find ourselves in a situation where we like have to move to a completely tech stack like 2 days into, in like after release? And like, there, like, I mean, this is just a relatively small example, but there's just all sorts of anxieties that go around that. And I think if you can spread those out over time and, you know, scale organically, fine, it might not be the sort of big bang sort of attention driving thing. It just, I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's sort of like a right or wrong answer. It's just those are the considerations that went into it for us.
You can certainly manage that sort of the infrastructure that you need more easily, can't you? Rather than something, you know, placing a Google ad and getting millions of traffic to your site and then loads of users.
Fingers crossed. I mean, that would be a great problem to have.
But yeah, if you've got the infrastructure, that's fine, isn't it? It's really interesting one. I think that a lot of businesses, you know, or people who think about starting their own business need to think about, particularly if it's an online business. And it definitely gives me some food for thought in terms of my approach, my sort of, you know, building up from my pre-launch to my launch. I mean, maybe I, you know, need to sort of keep it more the low, but we'll have to see and you know, and yeah, just it gives hopefully it gives lots of people something to think about. So what's the I guess the bigger ambition really for the business? And by the way, definitely send me a link. You know, I'd be delighted to sort of get involved if you need me. So yeah, more than happy to help.
Definitely, that'd be great. Yeah, it's a really good question. I think the bigger ambition we've always described as sort of like in a sort of corny nutshell, we always say like power to creators. But basically, it's about this observation that the majority of the podcasting market is sort of driven by big players. And there's very little room for sort of independent podcasters or smaller brands to grow. So we want to develop a sort of toolkit or sort of like a digital production team for independent podcasters and brands to help them be as successful as they want. And, you know, if that's being the next Joe Rogan or, you know, having a few thousand people familiar with your brand or whatever it might be, I think, that's in a nutshell what we're trying to do. And the reason we're starting with data and analytics is that I think, you know, what I've learned from my medical technology days, you can only really change what you can measure effectively, I think. And, you know, even today in product development, that is the sort of line that I pester everyone with. It's like, why are we building this feature? You know, if you can't measure the impact, then there's no reason to build it. And I think the same applies to podcasting. If you don't have really strong insight in terms of how your audience engages with what you're producing, then fine, you can run some ads and, you know, change your content or whatever it might be and sort of vaguely try and see what happens, but you're never really going to know what impact anything else had. And you know, for us as a team trying to build solutions for podcasters, we're not going to know if we've helped make them more successful or not. So that's why we're trying to sort of start out with providing that data, that meaningful insight. And then on top of that foundation, we'll want to add a range of tools that'll help you drive your strategy. Hello?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I lost you there. I think you're back.
Great. Where did it drop?
Just go over that bit about you want to sort of provide some meaningful data to the podcasters.
Yeah. Yeah. So then once we have that foundation of insights and data that can help them make stronger decisions, then on top of that foundation, we want to develop targeted solutions to help them, you know, achieve an improvement in those metrics that they care about. So be that anything related to sort of marketing and outreach interaction with guests or, you know, identifying better content or whatever it might be. We think there is a range of sort of targeted things that we can do to help with that. But we need that data and that insight first. And I think that can also probably get quite interesting because again, we're both from an advanced analytics background. So we think that there is some, I'm not going to say AI, but sort of advanced analytics methodologies that we can probably apply to get some really interesting insights first. And then go it from there.
Yeah, you know what? This it sounds amazing, and I really can't wait to sort of have a look and get involved and help wherever I can. So I think it's awesome.
Thank you.
And of huge value, you know, to anybody who wants to sort of I guess progress and improve and think about how they can get to I guess move the dial, in terms of the direction they want to focus on.
Because yeah, ultimately, I also think charting their own path, because I think there is a huge bias. It's kind of like the whole like influencer economy, right? Where you're like, okay, if you start a podcast, then it's because you're trying to be the next serial or, you know, some kind of NPR miracle, and you're going to make money through monetization. And I think too often that's seen as the only path, but it's also not a terribly realistic path for a lot of people out there. And there are so many other roles, like we've already talked about, that podcasting can play a role in your life and bring value to you and your business. And I think it's also partly about, you know, empowering those journeys. And sure, like the monetization path is legit, and we'll look at that as well. But we also want to like shine a light on some more nuanced and different strategies than that, and help people with that growth too.
No, definitely. I think that's awesome. Brilliant. Well, listen, Thomas, let's wrap it up. Is there any little tip before we go that you might want to give any budding sort of entrepreneur, somebody starting out their own tech startup? Any advice, pointers, anything to think about?
I mean, this is so hard because there's so many things. I think to summarize our discussion earlier, probably like do your discovery. Don't settle on a problem or opportunity, and certainly not in a technology too soon. Look at the holistic user journey. See how those different points connect, where you could have an intervention that drives value, and really do that homework first before you think about sort of problem solving in a specific area. I think that's probably the thing that I see too little of, and that a lot of companies would benefit from, if that makes sense.
No, fantastic, Thomas. Brilliant. Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure. Really great to meet you.
And, yeah, same.
Definitely. I wish you all the best for the future.
Thank you. You too. Stay in touch.